The Peloponnesian War remains one of history's most consequential conflicts, yet many are unaware of its profound impact on Western civilization. This 27-year struggle between Athens and Sparta, 431 to 404 BCE, established patterns of warfare, diplomacy, and political thought that continue to influence international relations today. Donald Kagan's masterful examination has been praised by military leaders like General James Mattis as essential reading for understanding strategic thinking, while political philosophers from Hannah Arendt to contemporary scholars have drawn on its lessons about democracy under pressure. Beyond academic circles, the conflict has inspired everything from Cold War policy debates to HBO's Game of Thrones, where the Stark-Lannister rivalry echoes the Spartan-Athenian dynamic. What makes this ancient war so persistently relevant? At its heart, it's a story of how competing visions of society, Athenian democracy versus Spartan oligarchy, collided in a struggle that would determine not just which city-state would dominate Greece, but which political model would shape the future. Athens and Sparta represented fundamentally different approaches to society and governance. Athens stood as the world's first democracy, vibrant, innovative, and expansionist. Its naval empire controlled the Aegean Sea, bringing wealth through trade and tribute from subject states. Athenian citizens participated directly in government through the assembly, where policies were debated openly and decisions made by majority vote. Their society celebrated intellectual achievement, artistic expression, and commercial success. Sparta, by contrast, maintained a militaristic oligarchy built on rigid discipline and conservatism. Their land-based power relied on the finest infantry in Greece, trained from childhood in a harsh system that subordinated individual desires to collective needs. Spartan society was remarkably stable, with unchanged political institutions for centuries. They led the Peloponnesian League, a coalition of states bound by treaties rather than direct control. These differences created natural tensions. As Thucydides, the primary historian of the conflict, famously wrote, "The growth of Athenian power and the fear this caused in Sparta made war inevitable." The Athenian Empire expanded steadily after the Persian Wars, alarming Sparta and its allies. Corinth, a major Spartan ally, felt particularly threatened by Athenian interference with its colonies. The 30 Years' Peace of 446 BCE established a fragile balance between these power blocks. Each side recognized the other's sphere of influence while agreeing not to interfere with the other's allies. This arrangement worked temporarily but contained inherent instabilities. Athens continued strengthening its naval dominance while Sparta maintained the strongest land army in Greece. Both sides viewed the other with suspicion, each believing the other was merely waiting for an opportunity to gain advantage. When disputes arose involving smaller states like Corcyra, modern Corfu, Potidaea, and Megara, these seemingly minor conflicts quickly escalated. The Megarian Decree, an Athenian economic sanction against Sparta's ally Megara, became a particular flashpoint. Though seemingly insignificant, it represented to Sparta an unacceptable encroachment on their alliance system's independence. By 431 BCE, both sides had convinced themselves that war was not only inevitable, but necessary to preserve their security and way of life. Pericles dominated Athenian politics for three decades before the war and shaped its early strategy. Born to aristocratic parents but committed to democratic principles, he combined intellectual brilliance with political acumen. Under his leadership, Athens reached its cultural and political zenith, the period still known as the Age of Pericles. What made Pericles exceptional was his rare combination of qualities. As a military commander, he demonstrated strategic vision and tactical restraint. As a statesman, he could persuade through reasoned argument rather than emotional appeals. His personal integrity stood in stark contrast to many politicians of his era. He lived modestly despite his power and refused bribes that were common in Athenian politics. Pericles developed a revolutionary war strategy that played to Athens' strength while neutralizing Sparta's advantages. Recognizing that Athens could not defeat Sparta in traditional land battles, he proposed what modern strategists would call a defensive-offensive approach. The Athenians would abandon their countryside when Sparta invaded, sheltering behind their impregnable city walls while using their navy to strike at vulnerable points along Sparta's coastline. This strategy required extraordinary discipline from the Athenian population. Citizens had to watch their farms and country estates being ravaged without responding, trusting in Pericles' assurance that houses and land are merely possessions that cannot be replaced, but men's lives cannot. He convinced them that as long as they maintained naval supremacy and preserved their empire's tribute, they could outlast Sparta in a war of attrition. Pericles' funeral oration, delivered after the first year of war to honor the fallen, articulated the values for which Athens fought. In this famous speech, he portrayed Athens not merely as a city, but as an idea, a society where freedom, opportunity, and cultural achievement flourished. Our constitution is called a democracy because power rests with the many rather than the few, he declared, contrasting Athenian openness with Spartan secrecy and rigidity. When plague struck Athens in the war's second year, Pericles himself fell victim. His death in 429 BCE deprived Athens of its most capable leader at a critical moment. Without his strategic vision and political authority, the careful balance between democratic impulses and disciplined execution began to unravel. As Thucydides observed, what was nominally a democracy became in his hands government by the first citizen. The first phase of the conflict, named after Spartan King Archidamus, who led the initial invasions, tested both sides' strategic assumptions. The Spartans expected Athens to quickly capitulate once its countryside was devastated. They were unprepared for Pericles' unconventional strategy of abandoning rural Attica and refusing decisive battle. Each spring, the Spartan army marched into Attica, systematically destroying crops, orchards, and farmsteads. The Athenians, following Pericles' plan, withdrew behind their walls while their fleet conducted raids along the Peloponnesian coast. This created a frustrating stalemate. Sparta could ravage Athenian territory, but couldn't force a decisive battle or breach the city's defenses, while Athens could harass Sparta's allies, but couldn't strike at Sparta itself. The plague that struck Athens in 430 BCE proved more devastating than any Spartan attack. Originating in Ethiopia and spreading through the eastern Mediterranean, the disease found perfect conditions in overcrowded Athens. Thucydides, who survived the infection himself, described its horrific symptoms in detail: high fever, painful ulcerations, uncontrollable thirst, and insomnia. Modern medical historians have suggested typhus, smallpox, or a hemorrhagic fever as possible culprits. Beyond its physical toll, perhaps a third of the population died, the plague devastated Athenian morale and social cohesion. Traditional funeral practices collapsed under the volume of deaths. Religious observances were abandoned as people questioned why the gods allowed such suffering. Lawlessness spread as many citizens, believing death imminent, abandoned restraint. Thucydides observed that fear of gods or law of man, there was none to restrain them. The plague claimed Pericles himself in 429 BCE, depriving Athens of its steadiest hand. New leaders emerged who lacked his strategic vision and moral authority. Cleon, a wealthy merchant described by contemporaries as brash and combative, advocated more aggressive policies. The careful strategy Pericles had designed began to unravel as Athenians, frustrated by confinement and suffering, demanded more direct action against Sparta. Despite these challenges, Athens achieved some notable successes. At Pylos in 425 BCE, Athenian forces established a fortified position on Spartan territory and captured elite Spartan troops on the nearby island of Sphacteria. This unprecedented humiliation forced Sparta to sue for peace, but Cleon convinced the Athenians to demand unreasonable terms, squandering the opportunity. The war's fortunes shifted again when the brilliant Spartan general Brasidas led a daring campaign into Thrace, threatening Athens' vital grain routes and encouraging rebellions among its northern allies. Both Brasidas and Cleon were killed at the Battle of Amphipolis in 422 BCE, removing the most hawkish leaders from both sides and creating an opening for peace negotiations. No figure embodies the war's tragic dimensions more completely than Alcibiades. Handsome, charismatic, and brilliantly intelligent, he was Pericles' ward and seemed destined for greatness. Yet his ambition, arrogance, and moral flexibility would ultimately prove disastrous for Athens. Alcibiades possessed extraordinary talents. As a military commander, he demonstrated tactical brilliance in naval and cavalry operations. As a diplomat, he could charm and persuade even his enemies. As an orator, he could sway the Athenian assembly with his eloquence. Yet these gifts were undermined by his fundamental unreliability. He served whatever cause best advanced his personal interests at any given moment. After the Peace of Nicias created a tenuous truce in 421 BCE, Alcibiades systematically undermined it by exploiting tensions between Athens and Sparta. He orchestrated provocative alliances with Sparta's enemies in the Peloponnese and convinced the Athenians that Sparta was not negotiating in good faith. His machinations reignited the conflict just when peace might have taken hold. Alcibiades' most consequential achievement was persuading Athens to launch the Sicilian expedition in 415 BCE. This ambitious campaign aimed to conquer Syracuse, the powerful Greek colony in Sicily, and secure its resources for Athens while denying them to Sparta. Against the warnings of the more cautious general Nicias, Alcibiades painted an irresistible vision of imperial expansion and limitless wealth. On the eve of the expedition's departure, Athens was shocked by the mysterious mutilation of the Hermae, sacred stone markers that stood throughout the city. Alcibiades was implicated in this sacrilege, and in mocking the Eleusinian mysteries, Athens' most sacred religious rites. Though he demanded an immediate trial to clear his name, his enemies arranged for him to sail with the expedition while they built their case against him. When the Athenians later sent a ship to recall him for trial, Alcibiades made the fateful decision to defect to Sparta. In one of history's most notorious betrayals, he advised the Spartans on how to defeat the very expedition he had championed. "I am not fighting against my country," he claimed, "but trying to bring back the country that is no longer mine." Following his advice, the Spartans sent their general Gylippus to Syracuse and established a permanent fortress at Decelea in Attica, cutting Athens off from its silver mines and agricultural lands. Alcibiades later fell out with the Spartans and fled to Persia, then engineered his return to Athenian service by promising Persian gold and support. His remarkable victories in the Hellespont region briefly revived Athens' fortunes, but when one of his subordinates lost a naval battle during his absence, the fickle Athenians dismissed him again. This final rejection deprived Athens of its most capable commander just when his skills were most needed. The Sicilian expedition represents one of history's most dramatic military disasters, a case study in how overconfidence and poor leadership can destroy even the most powerful forces. What began as Athens' boldest offensive ended in complete annihilation of its expedition, fundamentally altering the war's trajectory. Athens committed massive resources to this venture, 134 triremes, warships, 5,000 hoplites, heavy infantry, and thousands of support troops, the largest force any Greek city had ever sent overseas. The expedition's goals expanded dangerously from supporting Athens' Sicilian allies against Syracuse to the complete conquest of Sicily, an island nearly the size of the Peloponnese with numerous powerful cities. Without Alcibiades' leadership, the expedition faltered under the cautious, indecisive Nicias. Though he recognized the campaign's risks, Nicias lacked the courage to oppose it directly, instead suggesting that Athens commit such overwhelming forces that the assembly might reconsider. This backfired when the Athenians simply approved his expanded request, making the stakes even higher. The campaign began promisingly with several minor victories, but momentum stalled before Syracuse. Nicias delayed the crucial assault, giving the Syracusans time to strengthen their defenses and request Spartan assistance. When Gylippus arrived with a small Spartan force, he transformed Syracuse's defensive capabilities and morale. Athens sent massive reinforcements under General Demosthenes, but by then the situation had deteriorated critically. The Syracusans had constructed counterwalls that prevented the Athenians from encircling the city and had developed effective counters to Athenian naval tactics. In the confined space of Syracuse's Great Harbor, Athens' naval superiority became meaningless. The final naval battle in the harbor was catastrophic. The Syracusans blocked the harbor entrance with chained ships, trapping the Athenian fleet. In the cramped conditions, the Athenians couldn't maneuver effectively, and their ships were systematically destroyed or captured. The surviving Athenians attempted a desperate overland retreat, but were hunted down. Those not killed were imprisoned in stone quarries, where most perished from exposure, thirst, and starvation. The scale of the disaster was unprecedented. Athens lost approximately 200 ships and 40,000 men, a significant portion of its military-age male population. Beyond the material losses, the psychological impact was devastating. As Thucydides wrote, they were utterly and entirely defeated. Their sufferings were total. Fleet, army, everything was destroyed, and few out of many returned home. This catastrophe transformed the war. Athens' naval supremacy, the cornerstone of its strategy, was severely compromised. Sparta, sensing opportunity, renewed the conflict with unprecedented vigor. Athens' subject allies, perceiving weakness, began to contemplate rebellion. What had been a stalemate suddenly tilted dramatically in Sparta's favor. The war's final phase saw a crucial new player enter the conflict, the Persian Empire. Long considered the common enemy of all Greeks, Persia now became the kingmaker in their civil war, providing the financial resources that would ultimately determine the outcome. Sparta, traditionally xenophobic and suspicious of foreign influences, made the pragmatic decision to ally with Persia against Athens. In a series of treaties negotiated by the Spartan admiral Lysander, the Persians agreed to fund Sparta's naval buildup in exchange for recognition of Persian control over Greek cities in Asia Minor. This represented a stunning reversal of Sparta's claim to be fighting for Greek freedom. They now explicitly abandoned the Ionian Greeks to Persian domination. Persian gold solved Sparta's fundamental strategic problem. While Athens could pay its rowers through imperial tribute, Sparta had always struggled to maintain fleets for extended periods. With Persian subsidies, Sparta could finally challenge Athens at sea, neutralizing its last remaining advantage. The Persian satrap Cyrus provided Lysander with 10,000 darics, gold coins, per month, enough to pay thousands of rowers at competitive rates. Naval warfare in this period was extraordinarily expensive and logistically complex. Triremes, the standard warships, required crews of approximately 200 men, including 170 rowers who needed constant training to maintain effectiveness. These ships were designed for ramming tactics, using a bronze-sheathed ram to puncture enemy vessels, which required precise coordination and maneuver. Maintaining large fleets demanded enormous financial resources, secure harbors, and reliable supply chains. The war's decisive battles were fought in the Hellespont region, modern Dardanelles, where Athens' vital grain shipments from the Black Sea had to pass. Control of these straits meant control of Athens' food supply. Despite severe financial constraints, Athens rebuilt its fleet after the Sicilian disaster and won several important naval victories, including a complete destruction of the Peloponnesian fleet at Cyzicus in 410 BCE. Lysander emerged as Sparta's most effective naval commander. Unlike previous Spartan leaders who were often rigid and unimaginative, Lysander demonstrated flexibility, diplomatic skill, and strategic vision. He cultivated a close personal relationship with Cyrus, ensuring steady Persian funding, and built a professional naval force that could match Athenian expertise. The final naval battle at Aegospotami in 405 BCE demonstrated Lysander's tactical brilliance. After days of offering battle and then withdrawing when the Athenians formed up, he caught them unprepared when their crews were scattered ashore seeking supplies. The Spartan fleet captured nearly the entire Athenian navy, 170 ships, while suffering minimal losses. With this single stroke, Athens' naval power was broken, and its fate sealed. The war placed extraordinary strain on Athens' democratic institutions, revealing both their resilience and vulnerability. As military fortunes fluctuated, so did political stability, culminating in two oligarchic revolutions that temporarily overthrew the democracy Athenians had cherished for a century. Athens' democratic system had evolved since Cleisthenes' reforms in 508 BCE to become remarkably participatory. Major decisions were made by the assembly, ecclesia, where any citizen could speak and vote. Day-to-day administration was handled by the Council of 500, boule, whose members were selected by lot from all citizens. This system emphasized equality among citizens, though excluding women, slaves, and resident foreigners, and prevented concentration of power. The war's pressures tested these institutions severely. Military setbacks bred factional conflict, while financial strain created class tensions. The plague had killed many experienced political leaders, creating a leadership vacuum filled by less capable figures. Thucydides contrasted Pericles, who could lead the people rather than be led by them, with his successors who, in private competition with each other for popular leadership, they surrendered the conduct of affairs to the whim of the people. Cleon represented a new style of leadership, more confrontational and less restrained than Pericles. Though derided by aristocratic writers as a demagogue, literally people leader, he effectively channeled popular frustration with the war's progress. His successor, Hyperbolus, continued this populist approach until his ostracism in 417 BCE. The Sicilian disaster created conditions for the first oligarchic coup. With Athens financially exhausted and militarily weakened, a group calling themselves the 400 seized power in 411 BCE, claiming that a narrower government could more effectively prosecute the war. They were supported by wealthy citizens burdened by war taxes and promised Persian support arranged by Alcibiades, though this never materialized. This oligarchy lasted only 4 months before moderate elements, led by Theramenes, established a modified constitution called the 5000 that extended citizenship to all who could afford hoplite armor. This compromise government achieved several naval victories before full democracy was restored in 410 BCE. The second oligarchic revolution came after Athens' final defeat. Sparta imposed the 30 tyrants in 404 BCE, a brutal regime that executed approximately 1,500 citizens and disenfranchised thousands more during their 8-month reign. Led by Critias, a former student of Socrates, they specifically targeted democratic leaders and confiscated property from wealthy citizens to pay their Spartan supporters. Democratic exiles, led by Thrasybulus, eventually overthrew the 30, and Athens remarkably restored its democracy despite defeat. This restoration included an amnesty that prohibited prosecution for most actions during the oligarchic period, with exceptions for the 30 themselves, a remarkable act of reconciliation that helped heal civil divisions. Athens' democratic resilience demonstrated the system's deep roots in Athenian identity. Despite military defeat and temporary overthrows, democracy remained the government Athenians fought to preserve and restore. This commitment would influence democratic theory for millennia afterward. Athens' final defeat came not through decisive battle, but through slow strangulation. After the naval disaster at Aegis Batami, Lysimachus systematically reduced Athens' remaining allies and established blockades that prevented food shipments from reaching the city. Without its fleet to protect grain imports, Athens faced imminent starvation. Lysander's strategy was methodical and patient. Rather than immediately assaulting Athens' still formidable walls, he positioned his fleet at Piraeus to prevent any supplies arriving by sea. King Agis led Spartan land forces against Athens itself, completing the encirclement. Cut off from their maritime empire and food supplies, the Athenians held out through a brutal winter before finally surrendering in spring 404 BCE. The terms imposed on Athens were severe, but stopped short of the total destruction advocated by Sparta's allies Thebes and Corinth. The long walls connecting Athens to Piraeus were demolished to flute music, symbolically marking the beginning of freedom for Greece. Athens' empire was dissolved, its fleet reduced to 12 ships, and its democratic constitution temporarily replaced with an oligarchy. However, Athens itself was spared destruction, a decision Sparta would later regret when Athens recovered enough strength to challenge them again. The war's aftermath transformed the Greek world. Sparta emerged as the dominant power, but proved ill-equipped for imperial leadership. Their attempts to impose oligarchic governments throughout Greece created resentment, while their abandonment of Ionian Greeks to Persia undermined their moral authority. Within a decade, Athens had restored its democracy and begun rebuilding its naval power. By 395 BCE, Athens joined Thebes, Corinth, and Argos in a new anti-Spartan coalition supported by Persian gold, a complete reversal of the war's alliances. The war's human cost was staggering. Athens lost perhaps half its adult male population through combat, plague, and execution. Agricultural production throughout Greece was severely disrupted by repeated invasions and destruction of olive groves and vineyards, which required years to regain productivity. Commerce declined dramatically as trade routes were interrupted and capital depleted. Many Greeks were forced into mercenary service to survive, serving foreign powers, including Persia. The moral and cultural impact was equally profound. Thucydides described how war is a violent teacher that transformed Greek values. Words changed their ordinary meanings and were given new interpretations. Reckless audacity came to be considered the courage of a loyal ally. Prudent hesitation, specious cowardice. Moderation was held to be a cloak for unmanliness. Ability to see all sides of a question, inaptness to act on any. Traditional religious and ethical restraints broke down as the war progressed. The massacre of the entire male population at Melos, the civil war atrocities at Corcyra, and the execution of surrendered enemies became increasingly common. These horrors influenced philosophical developments, contributing to the ethical questioning of Socrates and later the skepticism of the Sophists. The Peloponnesian War has fascinated military strategists, political theorists, and historians for 2,400 years because it contains timeless lessons about power, leadership, and human nature under pressure. Its patterns continue to resonate in modern international relations and political discourse. Thucydides' analysis of the war's causes remains remarkably relevant. His observation that the growth of Athenian power and the fear this caused in Sparta made war inevitable introduced the concept now called the Thucydides trap, the dangerous dynamic that occurs when a rising power threatens to displace an established one. Modern scholars have identified this pattern in conflicts from the world wars to contemporary U.S.-China relations. The war demonstrated how democratic systems respond to prolonged stress. Athens showed remarkable resilience, recovering from plague, military disasters, and political revolutions while maintaining citizen commitment to the war effort. However, the pressures of extended conflict eventually produced demagogic leadership, factional strife, and impulsive decision-making that undermined Athens' strategic position. The tension between democratic deliberation and effective wartime leadership remains relevant to modern democracies facing security challenges. The conflict illustrated the crucial relationship between strategy and political objectives. Pericles developed a strategy perfectly aligned with Athens' strengths and limitations, but his successors abandoned this disciplined approach for more aggressive policies that overextended Athenian resources. The Sicilian expedition particularly demonstrates how democratic enthusiasm can lead to strategic overreach when not tempered by prudent leadership. Naval power emerged as the decisive factor in this ancient conflict, establishing patterns that would influence maritime strategy for centuries. Control of sea lanes, the ability to project power across distances, and the economic foundations of naval strength all played crucial roles. The war demonstrated how naval supremacy could neutralize land power advantages, a lesson that would shape the strategies of maritime empires from Britain to America. Perhaps most importantly, the war revealed how prolonged conflict transforms societies and individuals. The moral deterioration Thucydides documented, the increasing brutality, the abandonment of traditional restraints, the corruption of language itself, offers a warning about war's corrosive effects on civilization. As he observed, in peace and prosperity, states and individuals have better sentiments. But war takes away the easy supply of daily wants, and so proves a rough master that brings most men's characters to a level with their fortunes. The Peloponnesian War's ultimate legacy was the weakening of the entire Greek world. The exhaustion of resources, loss of population, and moral damage left the Greek city-states vulnerable to the rising power of Macedon under Philip II and his son Alexander. Within 70 years of Athens' surrender, Greek independence would be lost, partly because the strength that might have resisted Macedonian expansion had been consumed in the fratricidal struggle Thucydides chronicled with such insight and eloquence. The Peloponnesian War exemplifies what scholars term an Alcibiadean character of warfare, marked by strategic opportunism, political calculation, and tactical flexibility. Like its namesake, this approach to conflict emphasizes psychological elements alongside traditional military power, with leaders carefully weighing diplomatic alternatives against military action while remaining adaptable to changing circumstances. This concept derives from Alcibiades herself, whose approach to warfare blended brilliant tactical innovation with diplomatic maneuvering and psychological manipulation. He recognized that military victory alone was insufficient without corresponding political advantage. His campaigns consistently sought not just battlefield success, but strategic positioning that would enhance his personal standing and his city's influence. The war demonstrated how military strategy increasingly became inseparable from political calculation. When Sparta established its fortress at Decelea, they weren't simply seeking tactical advantage, but attempting to destabilize Athens politically by cutting off its resources and encouraging slave desertions. Similarly, Athens' campaigns in Sicily aimed not just at military conquest, but at denying resources to Sparta while expanding its own economic base. This Alcibiadean approach required leaders to balance multiple considerations simultaneously: military necessity, diplomatic relationships, economic constraints, and domestic politics. Successful commanders like Brasidas, Demosthenes, and Lysander demonstrated this flexibility, adapting their tactics to specific circumstances rather than following rigid doctrines. Those who failed to adapt, like Nicias in Sicily, suffered catastrophic defeats despite numerical advantages. The war's most successful strategies often involved indirect approaches rather than direct confrontation. Sparta ultimately prevailed not by defeating Athens' army, but by undermining its economic foundations and diplomatic position. The Persian alliance provided financial resources that enabled Sparta to challenge Athens at sea, while strategic positioning in the Hellespont threatened Athens' grain supply. These approaches targeted vulnerabilities rather than strengths, a hallmark of Alcibiadean warfare. Perhaps most significantly, this style of warfare recognized the importance of perception alongside reality. Alcibiades understood that appearing powerful could be as important as actually being powerful. Diplomatic initiatives, strategic deception, and carefully managed information became weapons as important as ships and soldiers. The war became as much a contest of narratives as of arms, a pattern that continues in modern conflicts where information operations and perception management play crucial roles. This Alcibiadean character would influence warfare throughout subsequent history. From Alexander's campaigns to modern counterinsurgency, successful military leaders have recognized that victory requires more than battlefield dominance. It demands a sophisticated understanding of political, economic, and psychological factors. The Peloponnesian War's legacy lies not just in specific battles or strategies, but in this fundamental insight about the complex, multidimensional nature of conflict itself.